Massachusetts State Representative Paul Mark of the 2nd Berkshire District entered the state legislature in 2011, representing 16 communities in the largely rural Berkshire and Franklin counties. WAMC recently sat down with Mark to talk about the Democrats' role as a member of the House's Rural Policy Advisory Committee and much more.
I'm the House appointee to the Rural Policy Commission, so I'm actually the only legislator on the commission. Speaker DeLeo appointed me to replace Representative Caridi when she died. She had been the chair of the Ag Committee, so it was a good fit for her as well. So when I took that over, I think it's been 2 years now, I became the only legislator. And what the Rural Policy Commission, its purpose is to try to look at legislation, budget items, different policy matters that affect the Commonwealth from a rural perspective. And so as a rural representative, we represent probably 60% of the land area in Massachusetts is considered rural, but less than 15% of the population lives in that same amount of land area. So when we go down to Boston, and this is true for the Berkshires, for Western and a lot of central Massachusetts, as well as for most of Cape Cod and the islands, you know, we're always at a numerical disadvantage from our colleagues in the Boston area and the suburban Boston area and the cities around the state. So the idea of the commission is to try to level that playing field a bit. And so over the past year, what the commission has spent time doing was listening to public input. They had stakeholder meetings all over Massachusetts and have people come in, members of the public, town, school officials, let the commission know, what do you think are the biggest areas of concern for rural communities, and what would you like to see done about them? So over this year, the commission came up with a plan. It's over 100 pages, the plan, and the initial statewide launch happened last week at the State House. We have a rural caucus. When we have a caucus in the legislature, a caucus is a group of legislators that gather together for a common purpose or a common idea. For the rural caucus, obviously, the idea is to try to support rural communities.
So let me jump in here for a minute. So as far as like the needs of rural communities, I imagine transportation ranks high among them. It's something that comes up constantly in conversations, even in larger communities out here like Pittsfield or Great Barrington. How does it reflect itself in the rural community here in Berkshire County?
Yeah, transportation is absolutely one of the issues that we keep hearing about. So in a town like Peru, where I live, there is no public transportation option at all. And that's true for probably half of the 16 communities that I represent. In a town like Dalton, where we're sitting right now, in Hinsdale, there's a little bit more of a population. And so there are limited public options, but still nothing near what they have in cities like Boston. And so for the county as a whole, we don't have any service available on Sunday for buses or public transportation at all, to my knowledge. And in Franklin County, which I also represent, there is no weekend service whatsoever. In the evenings, there is extremely limited service. And so this creates problems when people are trying to access employment opportunities, when people are trying to access educational opportunities. And I think it is one of the things that hold back rural areas in comparison to our urban neighbors. And so we try to, as a commission and as legislators, of course, we try to find ways to expand the options that people in smaller towns have, but it's difficult. And then when you add into that the obstacle of limited internet and limited cell phone service, even programs that are developing around the country and around the world, like Uber and Lyft and ride sharing and a lot of different apps I see, like you can go to places and there's bikes for rent, there's scooters for rent, and you can do this all on your phone, but those aren't an option out here in Western Massachusetts, and they may not be anytime in the foreseeable future.
So I know there is an upcoming transportation bond bill in the legislature. Tell me about that. What impact could that possibly have on your constituents?
Yeah, the transportation bond bill is going to be an avenue for a good deal of money to come for capital projects and improvements in roads, in public transportation options. And today, actually, there's a hearing in the State House. The governor is appearing before the Joint Committee on Transportation. The governor has to be the one that files a bond bill. He has filed one for the first time since he's taken office in 2015. We haven't had one of these transportation bond bills since 2014. And so in the last one, we got money for rail service. We got money for a lot of different projects, money for parking garage, money for a lot of different things, a lot of road projects. And so right now what we're looking for is input from people around the communities. I've gotten some good input over in Greenfield, over in Franklin County, but from people in Pittsfield, from people in Dalton, in the Hilltowns, it would be very useful right now to hear, is there specific projects that you'd like me or my counterparts in the Berkshire delegation to go after? And then there will be just general funding that will get distributed through normal programs, grants that already exist through MassDOT, but this will kind of re-up their funding.
So looking at another bill before the House right now, the House Greenworks bill, I know your Green Bank bill is one of your signature pieces of legislation. Tell me about the parallels between the House bill and your own work.
Yeah, I think the House bill was actually heavily influenced by the Green Bank and by advocacy of people in the 2nd Berkshire District. I have taken the opportunity to bring Speaker DeLeo out to the 2nd Berkshire, to bring Representative Tom Golden, who's the chair of the Telecom Committee, and I think what they heard was persuasive and interesting. And so the idea of this Green Works bill is to provide $1 billion over 10 years in funding, so $100 million per year that will be available for helping out renewable energy projects and green job programs. And so one of the best things about this bill is that it included a provision that 10% of the money over the lifetime of the bill must go to communities of 7,000 or fewer people. So money that will be able to flow right here into the Berkshires, and it will allow, in the bill as passed by the House, it would allow for small communities to band together. So a town like Peru might not have the resources to do something like this on their own, but they can join together with 3-4 towns and come up with a project that can be good for all of the towns. So it's a great opportunity. The Green Bank originally is envisioned as a way for getting capital, getting funding out to renewable energy projects that maybe don't have the same return on investment as quickly as traditional banks and traditional financing models would require. So making something that's specialized, because this is important as we think about climate change, as we think about unleashing economic opportunity, there's a lot of opportunity that exists because of the potential of this green revolution. People talk about the Green New Deal down in Washington. Well, I mean, this is something we can do locally, something that's tangible and has an actual price tag associated with it and can show results, I think, pretty quickly.
So higher education is a big part of your identity as a politician. This is something that's been a refrain of yours since the early days. You want to talk about the Cherish Act a little bit, and certainly like this disparity you've identified between funding for K-12 and higher ed in the state.
Yeah, there's been a great deal of progress being made over the past 9 years when we talk about funding for K-12 education. And it's obviously extremely important, something I've always supported. But I think the forgotten element still remains funding for higher education. When people hear that Massachusetts is actually not one of the top states in terms of how we fund public higher education, they're surprised. We're actually, I believe, in the bottom five. So if you rank the 50 states, we'd be 45th or lower in how we fund our education. In 2014-15, we were able to secure tuition freeze at UMass. We had UMass and the public universities, we had come to what they call a 50-50 split, and it was very successful. But unfortunately, since that time, funding levels have not kept pace. And so there's a bill called the Cherish Act. I'm one of the lead sponsors on, along with Representative Garbley out of Arlington and Senator Comerford out of the Northampton area. And while the Promise Act and the Student Opportunity Act has gotten a lot of traction, unfortunately, Cherish has not yet come to the forefront. And so I'm hoping Senate passed the K-12 bill last week. We're probably going to take it up in the House next week or the week after. I think once that's complete, it's time to renew efforts on getting higher education fully funded. And when you look at why does this matter, it matters because we're talking about over $1 trillion in student loans and student debt that is out there around this country. In Massachusetts, I believe the last I saw, we were ranked 12th in terms of what is the student debt that our students carry compared to the other 50 states. We have some of the greatest higher education institutions in the world, and that is what keeps Massachusetts so attractive to employers. It's what keeps us economically successful and successful as a state. But if people can't stay here, if people can't come back to the Berkshires afterwards because they're carrying all this student debt, it's not a sustainable model. And so getting to affordable education, getting to someday, I think possibly included education up through college level is important, and the Cherish Act is a way of getting there.
So last but certainly not least, you've been appointed to the Executive Committee of the Council of State Governments. Mr. Mark, what does that mean?
So the Council of State Governments is one of seven groups that exists for the purpose of getting government officials to talk to each other. So there's a National Governors Association, there's a National Council of Mayors, there's a Cities League, there's a National Conference of State Legislatures. Council of State Governments is specifically for state legislators, state executive branch, and state judiciary. So it's a great opportunity for government officials from all 50 states and the territories and parts of Canada to get together, talk about what are best practices, what are things you're working on in your state, what are things we could learn from you and take back to Massachusetts, and what are things we're doing in Massachusetts that can be helpful to other states as well. And when you get together in these conferences, I've been to conferences on renewable energy, I've been to conferences on education, I've been to conferences on general policy. It's usually a really great forum and a great opportunity for discussion, and the things you learn would be surprising. And I one of the things I found most valuable is how much other states actually look up to Massachusetts. And so as the executive committee member, I am the House appointee for Massachusetts to the executive committee member. So I'm part of helping to set the budget for the organization, helping to set strategy and policy for the organization, and helping with some of their training programs as well. I am a graduate of what they call their Eastern Leadership Academy. I'm a graduate of what they call the Henry Toll Fellowship Program. And these are great programs I've been able to go through. They're helpful in developing your skills as a legislator, enhancing your networks, and all of these things are good for legislators and helpful to the people they represent. The better I am as an advocate, obviously, the better I am as an advocate for the people I serve. And so it's a great honor that Speaker DeLeo appointed me this in January when the new session began, and it's kind of exciting.